Good morning.
Well, good morning, Faye. How are you?
Well, I'm trying to decide if it's summer or early fall, or are we really into fall? I can't make up my mind.
Well, no, I wouldn't decide yet. I'd still give it like several more weeks, maybe a couple of months. It's hard to tell at this point.
You think maybe it will be into November?
Oh, I'm thinking maybe January by the time you can settle on a decision. Yeah, it might be that long.
Well, I'm looking forward to it.
Well, no, you're not. That's way too long.
I know it is. It's way too long.
I mean, it should be.
I'm ready for it to cool off.
Yeah. I mean, by now, I mean, golly, we're into October. We're only a couple of weeks away from Halloween, and I couldn't believe it. You know, all of a sudden we got into Halloween month, and it was the first day of fall, and I'm like, hey, here we go. And it's just like, wow, this is exciting. And then it's still, like, hot. I'm like, wait a minute.
Well, do you know what Halloween things cost? Have you looked?
Not yet.
I wanted the big skeletons and all this. This stuff, if you wanted to do your whole yard, it costs you $1,000.
Really?
Or more. They're $390 a piece.
What? Seriously?
For the big, tall skeletons. Yes.
Oh, my word.
At Home Depot. When I heard about it, I said, well, I do need some new ones. I go, I'm not paying $394 a piece.
No.
That's ridiculous.
Oh, my God. I didn't realize they'd gone up that much.
Yeah. And the skeletons, oh, my gosh, over $300. The witches that I looked at were over 300. I finally found some that were 100 and some. But almost all the big, tall things that, you know, have the blinking lights and, you know, remote control with them, they were several hundred dollars.
Wow.
Yes.
I'm shocked.
I was pretty shocked myself. I said, well, you know, we used to have all these other places that had these, and they weren't near that much.
Yeah.
But everything has gone through the roof. Did you know they said we don't even have enough cattle in Texas, that people are having to buy their cattle from Mexico?
What?
And use it for meat?
Are you serious? What happened?
That's what it said. I read that. And, you know, if you read it, it has to be true.
Oh, of course. Did you read it on the internet? Because that gives it even more points.
Oh, yeah. You know, if you read it on the internet, it's got to be right.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. But everybody was saying some of these little restaurants have closed that served hamburgers. This one said meat had gotten so high, they just couldn't make a profit.
Wow.
Oh, that's what everybody's saying. That it's just too thin, the profit is.
Yeah.
And one company said that, you know, they sold all these kids for the kids, Legos and all this, and their profit was so low, they said, we can't even continue to sell Legos because they're coming out with them direct and beating our prices, and that's all we've got left to sell. All these toys for kids, they said, the profit's just gone.
Oh.
They said, we might as well close, and they are closing.
Oh, my word. And we're talking.
And it's just shocking how many companies are really closing because the margin is just too thin.
Yeah. I know the restaurant industry has taken a big hit. And then you've got, you know, like a lot of these are not only, I mean, some of them are big corporations that have been around for 100 years, but then you've got a lot of family-owned businesses, mom-and-pop types of things that just can't make it anymore, and they're just closing. They're just, I mean, that's it. They're just.
Well, this one company the other day declared bankruptcy, and after they started bankruptcy, they still gave the CEO $9 million.
What? Are you serious? You've got to be kidding.
And everybody goes, how did he get $9 million and they just declared bankruptcy? Well, they didn't want him to do without.
No.
You know, poor guy.
No.
He needed that $9 million.
Well, yeah. A lot of those CEOs.
It's shocking to me.
It is. It is really shocking to me. You know, you see a lot of CEOs, and if you ever get a hold of some of their contracts, I've seen these before where they have their bonuses built into the contract, and it doesn't matter about performance. It's just, here's an extra $9 million, and you're going to get it even if we have to furlough people or if we have to fire people or if we have to close locations. The CEO will get his bonus no matter what.
That's exactly right. He gets his money no matter what.
Yeah.
And if they have to lay everybody off, it's just too bad.
It is. And a lot of them are not even performance-based. It's just, here it is, here's extra. So there's no incentive to grow the company or do any better with it or, you know, make improvements.
To make a profit.
Yeah.
To make a profit for the other stockholders.
Yeah, which makes it very difficult.
That would be nice if they considered that, wouldn't it?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, imagine, I mean, you're a company, a big, huge company, and you're sitting there trying to do your budgets, and it's especially now with the cost of things, and you're trying to make the numbers work, and if you could all of a sudden have an extra $9 million without these bonuses, and I'm making numbers up here, but all of a sudden the CEO doesn't have to have his $9 million bonus. Could you imagine how far that could go? Or the other way, you're doing your profits and you're thinking, well, we're going to make a pretty good profit this year. And then you go, oh, no, we have to cut $9 million out because the CEO needs that. It's in his contract. It's
well, that was part of his deal.
Yeah.
It was he got it, whether or not you made a profit. And it wasn't tied to how much profit he could make for the company.
Yeah. And that's sad.
Yeah.
If they were more performance-based, it would maybe drive them to make better decisions or whatever, prevent these types of things. But my gosh, I've literally seen before where they specifically said it, in order for the CEO to get his required bonus, everybody in the company is going to be furloughed, work for free for a week. I've literally seen it with my own eyes. And
wow.
It's a thing. Yeah. And so I can't imagine trying to meet those types of budgets in the situation now, the climate we're in, where those profit margins are so small and so razor thin, an extra $9 million could go a long way, but they won't get many of them.
It could really help the bottom line
for
the stockholders.
Yeah.
But apparently they come before the stockholders.
Yeah. It's kind of, I think sometimes we may have put the cart before the horse. In some cases, but whoo, I feel like I may have sweated during that conversation.
There you go. I mean.
but back to Halloween. No, I had not seen Halloween yet. I'm afraid to look at the candy prices because, you know, I start looking at it in what, August?
I know you're into the candy.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm into the decorations because I love to put stuff out. And several of the neighbors had these big, tall, huge skeletons. You know, inside their fence. And I said, well, I'd love to have one of those. I came home and looked it up. And when I did, I almost fainted. I said, you mean that those skeletons cost that much? And that the witches cost that much?
Oh,
you know?
I had no idea.
I'll be buying a little fat frog or something. You know, something on the ground, you know, something low.
You'll have to make your skeletons and witches out of clay.
That's right. Or paper mache.
Oh, that's better.
Let's just make it out of paper. I mean, it couldn't cost much that way.
Oh, don't say those words.
That's right. Those famous words, you know.
Yeah.
It's kind of like when you hire someone to do something and you think you've got the price nailed down and they just, you know, every day it's something different. We didn't see this, so we have to charge you for it.
Yeah. Yeah, been there, yeah. Done that. All of a sudden, you get a great quote at the front, on the front end, and then all of a sudden, these little hidden things. Ooh, here's a surprise. Oh, here's a surprise. Oh, there's a surprise. Ooh.
Yeah, it's because they don't know what they're doing in the first place.
Yeah.
Or they would give you a price and stand behind it.
Yeah. I think we probably can all speak from experience, at least at some point. Run into something like that. So I'm sure we've all been there, done that before, and it is annoying. Ugh,
that's God. Right. Life is so interesting, isn't it?
It is. I think today is more like therapy with Faye Bagby.
There you go. Well, we all need a little therapy, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, you start with pie and ice cream. Oh. That's the best therapy you can get.
Oh, see, now you've just fixed everything. Just by mentioning pie and ice cream, I'm telling you, ice cream, it fixes everything, every single time.
You know, it does. A little ice cream goes a long way toward your mental abilities.
Yes. Yes,
and it will
does.
Make you, you know, relax mm-hmm. and make you happy and you'll smile.
Yeah. Yeah, it's good for your mood. If you have a sore throat, I take ice cream and it feels better.
It's good for almost anything.
It is.
Well, that reminds me. Do you ever buy anything at Walmart and have it shipped out?
Sometimes. Rarely, but sometimes.
Well, I do every day of my life, it seems like. It's probably not. But this week, I ordered some things, and I always check the list. Do you? Just before you put finalize, you check your list and make sure it's only one of everything. And I had that happen, and I thought it had one of everything. And when it was delivered, there was 12 packages of brown sugar. 12 packages. 10 pounds of brown sugar. I mean, how did they do that to me? I mean, they've done this before many times. And you have to go back and check that list again and again because it turns. Where it says one, it'll, you know, one time they gave me 37 boxes of Apple Jacks. 37 boxes.
Wow.
And I'm always telling them, you know, when I look at it and I check it, it says one of everything. And the time they get it, it was 37. And they didn't call or say, maybe she doesn't really want 37 boxes of this. They said, oh, no, I'm sure she does. We'll just put it in the car.
Did they have 37 boxes of Apple Jacks?
They did because they went in my pantry. It was enough for 6 months or a year. I don't remember how long, but a long, long time.
That'd have probably
you just
lasted.
You can't depend on them.
No. If I was eating Apple Jacks and I had 37 boxes, that would last me precisely 37 days. I can guarantee it.
Well, it lasted a long time, and I don't remember how long.
Wow.
You know. And now, well, that reminds me. One of the kids this week was in history class, and they were talking about all this, about trivia and all this, and my little granddaughter spoke up, and she said, well, you know, I know a station, you know, that has all this Western trivia all the time, and they said, who? And she said, Faye Bagby, and they looked at it, and they said, how do you know her? She said, she's my grandmother. And she said, she does Western trivia every week. Oh, my gosh. And she didn't tell them that they had to listen to the whole show to get to the trivia. I mean, she didn't mention that. But it was a history teacher she was telling this to.
Wow.
The history teacher wanted to know, said, well, how do you know her? You know? I mean, it was pretty funny.
So now you're the Western trivia lady.
That's right. Texas trivia lady. Wow. And she told her she knew her. Oh. Wanted to know how.
Oh, that's funny.
It was pretty funny. And then I got to thinking about it, and I said, they think the whole show's going to be on trivia, you know? I said, she didn't tell them that it's, you know, right in the middle.
No.
They had to... Got to do the whole thing in order to get that few minutes.
Just skip over that part. We'll just pretend you have to listen to all the other before you get to the trivia.
That's right. She didn't tell them that. She didn't tell them what all was involved.
Well.
She just said she knew me.
That's okay.
They wanted to know how you know her.
Well, she was doing some serious bragging then. That's great.
That's right. I mean, she was, you know, trying to tell them that she didn't know somebody that knew something about Texas history.
Well, yeah, now you
because
are
that's
the queen.
What they're studying.
Yes.
They're studying Texas history.
Are they really?
And yeah, that's this year it's all Texas history.
The whole year?
Yes.
Oh, wow.
They have a big history book on Texas.
Ooh, I didn't realize it was a whole year. That's pretty cool.
It is cool. And all the battles, all the stories of Texas, I mean, they couldn't possibly get it all in one book.
No, not even close. I mean, you've been doing trivia for years and years and haven't even scratched the surface yet. So.
That's right. We're always missing something that I'm finding that we ought to know about.
I know it. You could even go in and teach the class if you wanted to. You should be a guest speaker. That's what you should do.
Can you imagine? I'd be teaching them about where you can get ice cream, where you can get the best swimming holes, the teepee motel. I mean, you know, all these really interesting facts.
Well, if you lay it out like that, okay, kids, today we're going to talk about ice cream and swimming holes and teepee motels.
That's right. I mean, you got to be a little variety.
Yeah, that'll
you know,
hold their
you can't
interest.
Just stick one side of the fence.
Oh, no. No.
No. Make it interesting.
Yeah, yeah. Preface it with that, and then you've got their attention. I guarantee they'll be hooked for the whole thing.
That's right. At least they haven't asked me to come up there in person.
Oh,
can you imagine?
Oh, I'm going to volunteer you. I'm going to call the school on Monday, and I'm going to volunteer you.
They'll be glad to come up and help.
Yes, she would love to be a guest
speaker. Tell them a little bit of history of Texas.
Oh, yeah. By a little bit, we mean nobody's going anywhere for the next 8 hours, so get comfortable.
That's right.
Wow.
That's right. Get comfortable, settle down.
And take notes, because there will be a quiz at the end. Oh, wow.
That's right. And they've been having quizzes.
Have
and
they?
The children aren't doing real well yet on quizzes.
That's
and they should, because they hear me talk about Texas all the time.
I know it. It's like they get a lesson in school and they get a lesson at home. And so.
That's good for them.
Yeah, it is. We should all have learned more like that when we were kids. And so, I mean, this
that's
is a
right.
great
wouldn't
opportunity.
Wouldn't it have helped?
Yes.
Yeah.
It would have been
but
great.
But we didn't know about all we know now about Texas history when we were kids.
No.
They were just touching the high points.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you've gone way, way deeper than I could have ever imagined. I mean, even just growing up and learning what I've learned. And I had no idea, you know, that there was so many different things, and they could go into in so much depth as you have gone.
There you
just,
go.
Yeah,
we don't want to touch the surface. We want to get in it and kind of rumble around a little.
Yeah, rumble around. Yeah, kind of like a like a ball pit at the playground.
That's right.
Wow, this is Your Money with Fay Bagby. Your phone number is.
It's 877-588-3330. That's 877-588-3330. Our website's AmericanFinancialMidland.com.
I think, now that I sit here and I think about it, I was going to make a joke that, you know, after all that, we're not going to do trivia today, but obviously I was kidding. But then I thought, well, there was one show in all these years that we ran over and didn't do trivia. Remember that? It was just one. It was several years ago.
Because we talked too much.
We did.
And we talked too long.
We went
too much and too long.
We did. Other than that, one show, there is trivia every day. So that'll come up here in a little bit. But first, we do need to talk about some money. So what's on your mind with money today?
Well, you know, people can do a lot of things with their money. They can do something that is conservative. They can do something with 100% risk. It depends what age they are as to how much risk they can stand. And my people can't stand a lot of risk because, you know, they're getting ready to retire. That's when they come to us. When they've been in the stock market all those years, they've seen it go up and down and sideways. But when they retire, they want it to be solid. They want that money not to go anywhere, the principal to always be safe. And so that's why we offer insurance products. Both things that we do are an insurance product. So you know your money's safe if it's in an insurance policy. You know, when we started out, we had to learn just like everybody else. And it took a long time, but we finally got it right. And so when we do a policy, you know, people know that they'll get their money back. They know that what the interest rate's going to be. They know if it goes over what it'll cost. Everything is laid out for them. And they have to be accredited to do this. So they have to make either $200,000, they have to be worth $1 million without their house to participate. That's a government rule. We don't set the rules. But everybody that participates in this, you know, at the end of the deal, whether it's 20 months, 26, whatever, they get their principal and their interest at that time. And so that's what everybody likes about it, is they're investing in someone that owns a life insurance policy, and that we know that they've got cancer, we're not going to buy it. And there's some kind of cancers that we like better than the others, and we know which ones have made the most money. So that's what we try to go for. And then they're short term, you know, we don't want anything over 30 months. And lately we've had some real long term ones offered us, which we've turned them down.
Yeah.
But the people that have been with us a long time, you know, they've consistently made money. We've returned $200 million in the lifetime of this company.
Wee.
So that's a lot.
Yeah, it is.
And right now we've got $97 million invested.
Really? $97 million?
Yeah, $97 million is invested.
Wow.
So people have a lot of money with us. And then every time anybody gets ready to retire, they usually call us, say, I'd like to do life settlements. I've been listening to you for years, but I couldn't do it then. But now I'm going to have this lump sum of money, $500,000, $600,000, or $1 million, whatever, and we'd like to put it with you. And some people say, I want it all in life settlements. But then there's some people say, no, I want part of it in annuities. And they want to draw that annuity every year the rest of their life. And annuities are different in that it never goes down like the stock market. It's not directly ever in the stock market. And, you know, we have it in indexes, all kinds of indexes. They study these indexes year to year. They can tell us what ones are making money, what has made the most. And it's averaged 10% the last 10 years. Not every year is going to be 10. You know, there's going to be some that are low, some high, and some medium. But it's worked out, and people have got enough interest every year to live. And so that's why they keep their annuities. And they've had them for years with us. We've been doing annuities since 2003.
Wow.
That's a long time.
Yeah, it is.
And so a lot of those people are getting elderly now. You know, I talk about the lady in Waco that retired from the paper, you know. She's used up almost two annuities, but her third annuity she's never touched. So the interest on it has grown for 20 years.
Wow.
So
wow.
It's a nice, fat annuity.
And
you know, a lot of people take monthly or annually, or they may have two annuities, and one they draw every year, and the other one they just let it sit there and accumulate. And that's a good thing because it's compound interest. You know, it's tax-deferred until you take it out. Not a lot of investments are tax-deferred every year. A lot of investments, you have to pay taxes that year, but you don't with an annuity. So that's the good thing about annuities. And then having a big company that's worth billions of dollars is real important. And we know which companies are paying good and which ones will tie up the money. And when you come to the end of 10 years, you have to do a payout. And with the companies we use, you get your money if you need it at the 10th year and it's yours. And then, you know, that we've been on this bonus kick now for a year. And now they've increased it 2 points, and that's till I think it's November the 23rd.
Oh, wow.
So it's given 16% right now. It's got 2 extra points on it. And remember, everything you put in that annuity for the next 3 years, you get that bonus. Every time you put money in, you get that 16% for 3 years. So there's everything good about annuities, not anything bad. And they pay good, and when you need that money every year, it's there. It's not like the stock market. It may be there, it may not be.
Yeah, I mean, I think sometimes people, you know, get used to, oh, it's just going to always be there, and then boom, something happens, and it's not. You had mentioned something a minute ago that kind of got my attention, and I kind of want to explore that a little bit more. You had said something about when people, you know, are getting close to retirement and they live off the interest for their forever. And when you're saying they live off the interest, that's not even touching the principal, right? I mean, all they're doing is taking out just the interest.
A lot of people just take the interest out every year and don't get into the principal. But if a person needs it, what I do when we talk, I say, okay, how much are you going to need per year? Do you need 10% out of it? You can take 10% out. A lot of people don't take but 4 or 5%. Or they may say, I want to delay this for 4 or 5 years. I want to put in a lump sum, and then in 4 years or 5, I'm going to need to start taking it out. And that way, the interest has really grown in 5 years. So you've got lots of interest. You can start taking that out every year, and you're not even going to get into your principal. That's what most people do.
So if
everybody has a different way of doing it. Sometimes they have a his and her policy. He'll have an IRA, she'll have an IRA. Or they may have joint money. You know, they may have sold their business and want to do a joint account, which they can do. And then, of course, you've got your beneficiaries. You can name anybody you want. You can take them out at any time you want. You can change it. But most people, they have, if it's a joint policy, the man wants to protect his wife. When he passes away, he wants her money to be safe and nobody come in and steal it. So if it's in the annuity, it's safe. She can go right on what she's doing. And we've only had one case out in Amarillo where the lady, she was almost 90, and this fast-talking salesman came by, and before she knew it, she had signed her annuity up to cash it.
Oh.
But she woke up after he left, and she said, "Oh, my gosh, I know what he did. He's going to take my money out of my annuity and put in something else." So she called the insurance company. She called me. She said, "What in the heck do I do?" I said, "You've got to write a letter right away and say this salesman came and tried to do you under, and you don't want that done to your annuity." And so she stopped it real quick.
Okay.
But most time, you know, people will leave those annuities alone on people, and so their money is safe. But every once in a while, somebody will try to do somebody under. So that's why you need that protection.
So let me just, because this is a little bit of a different perspective, and I don't think we've ever really kind of explained it this way before. So if somebody was, say, 4 or 5 years away from retirement, if they were to start an annuity now, not touch it, due to that compound interest, it just grows and grows and grows exponentially, and it adds up very quickly. So by the time they get to retirement, there's a pretty good chunk of assets
with
there.
Interest there. Yeah, the interest is there, and they can just start taking interest and leave their principal, and it's going to last a lot longer than most investments because you've sat there and the interest just piled up and you weren't using it. So since it's compound, you'll have a nice nest egg of interest on your policy, which really helps.
Wow.
And lots of times I've had somebody call and say, "Faye, I need to change the beneficiaries. Something happened and you're unhappy." So we can change the beneficiaries at any time as long as you're alive. When you're dead, whoever you got on there, they get the money.
Yeah, and we've heard all kinds of horror stories sometimes.
I have heard a lot of horror stories.
When that happens.
And, you know, sometimes these kids get the money and it's going to be gone. 15 months. And they'll be coming back trying to get some more money.
Oh yeah, yeah. Like it's an ever growing money tree out in the backyard. And our parents lectured us. They said there's no such thing as a money tree, so it still doesn't exist just because there's an annuity there, or you know somebody left you something. It's not how it works. It doesn't feed itself like an amoeba. It's just it is what it is. And so. Having this different perspective, I think maybe a lot of people sometimes they think, well, geez, I should have started, you know, investing or doing something to grow my wealth when I was in my 30s or maybe even 40s. And so now as I'm, you know, 4 or 5 years away from retirement, I'm in trouble. I'm nowhere near where I wanted to be. But that's not true. With an annuity, you can put it in, and if you don't touch it for several years, you've got a really good starting point, and you haven't even touched the principal, which I think is fantastic. It's just, you know, and knowing that it's safe and protected from things like the stock market or anything else, it is, like you said, in a life insurance product. It makes it more... what's the word I'm looking for? Stable, consistent, conservative?
I think it's more conservative because remember, it mirrors the stock market. When the stock market goes up, it goes up. If the stock market goes down, it has a stop gap. It stops and just sits there. So you don't ever have a downturn. You don't have a loss potential on an annuity. That's what everybody loves about annuities.
And it's not going to...
A lot of people tell me, "Faye, I've been listening to you for years, but I didn't have the money till now. I'm just now retiring, and now I can do something." And sometimes, well, the last two or three people have said, "I want most of it in annuities, but I want some of it in life settlements, because life settlements, the interest is so good on it. You know, it makes a good deal of interest." And somebody this week, you know, was looking at what they'd made on a policy, and they'd made... over a 3-year period, they'd made $69,000.
Oh, wow.
And the premium was just very small on it. So they had done very well. And lots of times people don't know how well they did. And they'll ask us and we'll show them, you know, how much principal they had in a product, how much interest they made, and when it matured.
Wow.
And remember, when you're doing the life settlement, when it matures, you get your principal, you get your interest, and sometimes you get extra interest if it took them longer to pay out, because they'll pay interest from the day they got the claim in until they get the check out. And every once in a while, we'll have people get quite a bit of money because it took them so long to pay out. But remember, we have a trustee on every life settlement. So the trustee handles all the money. They handle the payment when it matures. They put the money in your account. We tell them how much goes in each account. They put the money in the account. So the trustee is there to protect your investment. And we've been using them for years and years.
Yeah.
So it's pretty conservative.
It is. And knowing that you're always available and, you know, there's always a person to talk to. I think a lot of times people hear these stories about how, or you've even told these stories before, too, is how somebody gets into something and there's some shiny thing that comes along and it's, oh, this is whiz bang. And, oh, look at this. It's going to give you great returns overnight and all these things. And it's shiny and pretty and it blinks and all this. And people sometimes go for it because, wow, this is really exciting. I'm going to get into this. And then all of a sudden, their money's gone. The people are gone. There's nothing there. But with something, you know, like what you've got going on, you know, it's so highly regulated. And having the trustee involved and having, you know, the way the whole thing is set up, just knowing that there's all these regulations in place and it's all in place for people's security. And I don't think probably in all the years that you've been doing this, there's ever been any kind of issue with anything. There's never been a story of anybody.
I don't think so because, Philip or whoever you talk to up there, they're always ready to help you. If there's something you need on your account that I haven't done, you know, they'll be glad to handle it. We can always do a printout of what you've made, what you've got invested. And they pay interest on your account, just like a money market account. It doesn't just sit there. If you've got cash in the bank, you're getting interest on it.
Wow. And you're talking about...
It was 4%, and it's less now because the interest rates went down. But people are always making cash interest on their accounts. And banks don't usually even do that. Unless you've got a CD or something, they just leave your money there and use it, and they're not paying any interest on it.
Yeah. I mean, if you're going to leave your money someplace, I mean, if you're not in a policy or something, you know, you might as well make some money, you know, just having it sit there. And you're not going to get that in many other places. And you were talking about Philip at Nevada Trust, right? When you say Philip?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Uh-huh. And so it's
Philip Kingman is the president.
It's just
talk to him or anybody else, the vice president.
It's so rare to hear that, oh, yeah, you can call the president of the bank or the vice president.
That's right. It's easy.
You don't hear. Most people, they don't even know who the president is or the vice president.
And the vice president is James. Oh. And everybody does talk to him because he verifies. They don't have some girl verifying. It's always an officer of the bank.
What did you say?
And then, you know, a guy said the other day, he tried to reach me and couldn't. I went back and looked at my phone calls, and he had not called. I don't know who he was calling, but he didn't call me because, you know, I take every call.
Yeah.
If anybody calls, you know, I'm glad to talk to them.
Yeah.
Everything stops with me.
And that's a nice thing to know. I mean, not only is the investment solid, but knowing that there is a person there, you or anybody at, you know, Nevada Trust, it's good to know that there are people, actual people that you can
real
talk
people.
To. Real people. And it's not like...
And they talk to Claudia also.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of times if it's something easy, they'll call Claudia.
Yeah.
And, you know, Claudia's been with us 9 years.
Oh, really? I didn't realize
that
long.
Yeah, she's been there 9 years.
Oh, my word.
Or they'll talk to Flint. Now, Flint is an accountant, you know? He does accounting type things.
It's just
sends out the notices that tells you things.
So we'll call. Can we call Flint the enforcer? Or is that too much?
There you go.
Yeah, there you go. Now Flint has a nickname.
There you go. He's going to love that deal.
Oh, yeah. Don't tell him I said that. I'll get an email on Monday.
That's right.
Heard you call me the enforcer.
Yeah, wow.
There you go. We'll have to come up with a nickname for Claudia, too. I don't know what that would be.
There you go. You think about that.
Yeah, it'd have to be something nice. I it'll come to me at some point, but I'll figure that out. Or maybe, probably at this point on Monday, you'll start getting suggestions. Somebody will call you and say, hey.
There you go. Somebody will make a suggestion for you.
Yeah, they will. Which is probably better for everybody anyway.
That's right.
Wow. This is Your Money with Faye Bagby. Your phone number is?
It's 877-588-3330. That's 877-588-3330. Our website's AmericanFinancialMidland.com.
And every Saturday around this time, we get into trivia. So what is our topic today?
It's a really interesting topic, one that I really like. It's the Battle of Adobe Walls. I don't know if you remember the Battle of Adobe Walls. Took place out in the Panhandle.
Oh, no, I don't remember.
It occurred on November 25th, 1864. And it was in the vicinity of Adobe Walls, the ruins of William Bent's abandoned trading post. On the north side of the Canadian River, it was about 17 miles from Stinnett in Hutchinson County. Now, the general, James Henry Carleton, he was commander of the military district in New Mexico. He wanted to punish the Plains tribes, the Kiowas and Comanches. He figured they were responsible for all these wagon train attacks on the Santa Fe Trail. So the Indians saw the wagon train as trespassers. They were killing their buffalo and their other games, and the Indians needed it to survive. So old Carleton, he wanted to put an end to the raids. He said, or at least send a sharp signal to the Indians. The Civil War had not left the United States unable to protect itself. So he gets Kit Carson. You know, he was an Indian fighter, a famous guy. He said, I want you to go down there, and you get these Indians rounded up and do whatever you need to do to them. And so the campgrounds of the Comanches and the Kiowa, they were somewhere close to Paldier Canyon in the Panhandle. And they said they were on the north side of the Canadian River. So on November 10th, 1864, old Kit Carson started from Fort Branscombe. He had 260 cavalry, 75 infantry, and 72 Ute Apache scouts. And he got these from Lucian Mackwell's ranch in Cimarron. So they're going down there, and he said he had 27 wagons, an ambulance, 40 days of rations, and he was going down the Canadian River in the Panhandle, and he was going to go to Adobe Walls. Well, he also had a couple of big guns. So he figured, you know, with that, he could just do away with all those Indians. And so he was searching for Comanche and the Kiowas, and it was starting to snow. They were making slow progress. By this time, it's November the 21st, and they were in Moore County. They were 30 miles west of Adobe Walls. And the scouts reported that they had found a tribe of a large Indian village. And old Carson left his entry behind to guard his supply train. And he said, we'll march on them at night, and the cavalry and the artillery. And the next morning, he owed the two howitzers forward to join him. And he intends just go in there and wipe the Indians out. Well, 2 hours after daybreak, the cavalry found an attack to the Kiowa village. It had 176 lodges. And they were running and hiding. And he thought, well, there's not very many of them. There was 3,000 Indians before it was over.
Wow.
3,000 Indians coming at him.
Surprise.
He changed his mind. Things weren't like he thought, you know. And by afternoon, he was facing 3,000 Indians.
Oh, wow.
And after 6 hours, he said, you know, we're running low on howitzer shells, ammunition, and he ordered his forces retreat to the Kiowa village. And he was concerned about the fate of the 75 men guarding the supply train. Well, he didn't have enough people to fight the Indians, you know. And, you know, it was over before it started. And he lost about 75 men. And he declared victory. And the Kiowas, they said they won. And everybody, you know, had a different story on it. And the Carson was well known by all the Indians of the Southern Plains. It left the Comanche and the Kiowas unchallenged in their control of the Texas Panhandle. But this is not the end of the story. Adobe Walls had a second battle 8 years later.
Really?
This is what I found so interesting about the whole thing. There was two battles of the walls, and you won't believe who was at the second battle. Bat Masterson.
Really?
Indian fighter, everything in the world. You know, he was a buffalo hunter. He was a civilian scout. You know, he was a famed gunfighter, and he was sheriff in Dodge City. And he came from Canada, and he came to Texas. And everybody is shocked, and I was shocked, that, you know, somebody as famous as Bat Masterson was in Texas, and he was involved in the second fight.
Wow, I didn't know that.
I didn't either. I just found it. So the second gunfight took place on January 5th, 1876, in Sweetwater, Texas.
Really?
And it was attacked by a soldier named Melvin King, and because he was with a woman named Molly Brennan. Molly Brennan was hit by one of King's bullets, and possibly, they said, by accident. But anyway, King died. Masterson was shot in the pelvis but recovered. That's why he used a cane in all those movies. You know, when you've seen Gene Kelly?
Yeah.
He had that cane for the rest of his life because he was shot in the pelvis.
Wow. I didn't know that.
Yeah. So, you know, he was at two different places in Texas during that time. And, of course, as you know, Bat Masterson became famous and a legend in his own lifetime. You know, he was a major gunfighter. You know, he did all these trails. Everybody knew who he was. He was sheriff in Dodge City, many places. And he was a legendary fighter and a buffalo hunter. When he was a young boy, he left Quebec, Canada, him and his brother, to come west to hunt buffalo at a young age. So they came all over the plains. They came to Texas. He was in Adobe Walls battle. Then he was in Sweetwater, and he killed that guy. And that was the first gunfight that he was in.
Wow.
First gunfight was in Sweetwater, Texas.
Really?
Yes. And then in later years, after the West was tamed and he was no longer needed as, you know, all these big-time deals as sheriffs and a gunfighter and a gambler, he loved to play cards. He also had a fighter. And he was a boxing promoter. So later in life, he moved to New York City and became a famous correspondent and a newspaper man. After all this, after being all over the West. And, you know, I love the story about Masterson. You know, there's a new book out about Masterson, an autobiography somebody written about him. But he was one of the most colorful men in the West and was very famous. And, you know, his hat, his derby hat, you know, his walking stick, nobody knew that he'd been shot in the pelvis.
I had no idea.
Why he had that cane. Yeah, all those years he had that cane, and he made it look like it was just a decoration.
Yeah.
But it wasn't, you know. Because he'd been shot, he needed that cane.
I thought it was just a prop.
Can you imagine? He was right here in Texas during two big battles, and nobody ever told me, and I had never read where he was at Adobe Walls in that second big battle.
Yeah, I never heard that either. I had no idea he was even here, let alone, you know, it's like now we find out he was here for not only one, but two. And then we find out that the walking stick was not just a prop. It was like he really needed it.
Yeah, everybody thought it was a prop.
Yeah.
And he made it look so interesting, but actually he'd been shot. And, of course, then he went to Dodge City. you know, he joined everybody there, you know, all the other guys, they went to the OK Corral, if you remember that story.
Oh, yeah.
And he became more famous as he went on. And he was just a kid when he came west and became a buffalo hunter, then an Indian scout, you know, and he was just a marvelous man. All the stories about him are just legends all over the world.
And did you say there's a new
book? I thought that was so interesting.
I didn't know that. There's a new book about him?
Yes, there is a new book out.
Huh.
A new autobiography somebody's written about Bat Masterson. And the reason I got to know all about him was Gene Kelly played him in all these movies. And I think I've watched every one of his Old West movies.
Oh, I'm sure. Multiple times.
That's right. And I found it very, very interesting. You know, he was a ladies' man in addition to everything else. I mean, he loved the ladies.
Yeah.
And he would defend them to the end.
Yeah.
And, but can you imagine a buffalo hunter, an Indian fighter, a boxing promoter, and a sheriff of Dodge City? He was a sheriff of a lot of different places. But the fight at the OK Corral with Wyatt Earp and, you know, Doc Holliday and all those, that's another thing that made him even more famous.
Yeah. I mean, that's legendary. And that's...
It is. It's a big legend, and he's bigger than life and was bigger than life. And then after all this and the West settled down and the Indians weren't fighting us anymore and we weren't fighting them, when the West was tamed, he went all the way to New York City and became a famous columnist.
Yeah.
And they said, you know, it was because he knew what to write about. He'd been there and seen it all.
Yeah.
And so his stories in the newspaper made him famous. And he was already famous in the West, but he wasn't in New York, and he became famous there too.
Yeah.
So I thought that was interesting that he was at Adobe Walls.
I almost kind of feel like he started to get noticed or we can call famous, you know, at the OK Corral, and then kind of maybe people went back and maybe found out other things that he had done before this, because I didn't even know about, you know, that he was even in any of these. Really, I guess my first awareness was, you know, the thing with Wyatt Earp and Doc Holliday and all that. And then I guess maybe going forward a little bit, but you know, you never really think about going back and revisiting what somebody had done before that. This is all brand new to me. I had no idea that he was here or even twice.
And remember, the first gunfight he ever had was in Sweetwater, Texas.
Yeah.
First gunfight that he was ever in, and he was in a lot of them.
Yeah, he was. And I mean, I guess his resume, where he started buffalo hunting and then Indian scout and then, you know, eventually going
an
through
Indian
all this.
Indian fighter.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, he had six brothers.
Did he? I didn't realize
he had six brothers. He had six brothers. And one of them came with him out west, but I never heard any more about him, about his brother.
Yeah.
But he had one brother came to hunt buffalo, and that's why they came west. They wanted to go and hunt buffalo. And I don't know how good a shot he was back then, but that's how he started out, looking for buffalo. And he was going to get all those hides and sell them. It involved to a lot more.
Yeah. It almost sounds like that's where he kind of, like, I guess, practiced, for lack of a better term. You know, and then you kind of, I guess, practice makes perfect, as they say. And then,
that's right, it does.
You know, and so then when it came time for, like, something that really mattered in, like, high pressure and high intense gunfight, you know, then all of a sudden, now he kind of knows what he's doing. Whereas if gunfight was his very first experience, you know, it'd probably end up a whole lot different. But, yeah. I mean,
and, of course, Adobe Wells, the battle didn't last long.
Yeah.
Just a few days. But he was right in the thick of it.
Yeah.
That's what's so amazing.
Yeah.
And I'd never seen it in any of the Texas history I'd read.
Uh-uh.
And yet it was here all the time if we'd went and seen the second battle of Adobe Walls
yeah.
in the history books.
It just
but everybody that went to that first battle, and it was all about Kit Carson.
Yeah.
And the Indians, he thought he was going to take out. And when 3,000 Indians approached him, those howitzers, you know, weren't going to do a lot.
Yeah, no. It's like,
I mean, you know, they were surrounded.
You go in thinking, this is just a piece of cake. No worries.
That's what he said, you know. And he said, we'll surprise them. We'll go in at night.
Yeah.
Those dadgum Indians were out there all the time. And the shock was when he realized there was 3,000.
Yeah.
I mean, there was 75 of them and 250 over here. And, you know, he was outmanned and outgunned.
Yeah. They're probably thinking he's going to be sneaky and creep up on us. And then there's 3,000 people. Joke's on you.
The joke was on him. And he survived it. That's the funny thing.
I know it.
He was not killed in the fight.
I know it. You got 3,000 people staring you down. And to walk out of there is just, it's quite fascinating. I didn't.
And what's funny, each side thought they won.
Yeah.
That's what's really amazing to me. I mean, they had this little skirmish, and the Indians, you know, felt like they had won. And O.K. Carter said, oh, no, we did fine. We won. He knew darn well they didn't win.
Yeah.
He didn't have enough men to win.
Not even close. It wasn't even
a fair
fight.
And I don't know where he got the howitzers. You know, he had two of those, and they were running out of bullets.
Yeah.
You know, they didn't have enough bullets to finish the fight.
No, not even close. And so,
no, with 3,000 Indians on your tail.
You're going to need a lot more than what you had. I mean, to sit and fight over who won the battle, that's a whole nother thing.
That's right.
I don't know if that's comedy or if it was something else written into that story, but wow. I did not know. And then to go on and, you know, tell the I guess as a columnist, you know, to write things from a firsthand perspective, it always has a much different, relatability, I guess, because, yeah, because, I mean, you were there. You know, you can write it about it firsthand and all the details and not just kind of guess.
And look how many times he was in a battle after this first one, Sweetwater, Texas. He had years to write about.
Oh, yeah.
All the fights he was in, the Earps, and all the things they did with him, all the times he was sheriff, and, you know, all the trading with Indians, everything he did, and was never killed out west.
Yeah.
I mean,
to be in that many dangerous situations and survive, it's pretty incredible.
And then, of course, you know, there was a lot of crooks that he brought to justice. It told about all the crooks that he arrested.
Hmm. I mean, just
so he found a lot of them and brought them in.
Yeah, just a legend, and apparently he's more of a legend than what we actually thought.
Yeah, he's a legend in his own time. They're always saying that, but it really was the truth.
Yeah, yeah, and what we knew before, I guess, was just kind of like the tip of the iceberg, which is surprising because I mean, what we already knew was pretty spectacular, and now we find out, you know, he was in both of these battles out here, and just I don't know, it just adds more heroism maybe
it
to the story.
It makes it really more interesting about the West.
Yes, it really, really does, and so
that our people really did exist, and they really did do these things. It wasn't. It's just somebody's imagination.
No, no. And back in, you know, 1860s, you know, I mean, that was a difficult, life was difficult back then. I mean, you didn't.
Oh, my gosh, yes, it was difficult. If you could manage to get in and out of town without being killed, it was, you know, pretty interesting.
Yeah. And so, you know, I mean, it's pretty incredible, you know, the ingenuity that some people had back then to do the things that they did. You know, sometimes I think today, if we were in a situation like that, some people would be probably pretty lost and wouldn't know what to do. And so, you know, it's pretty incredible.
Well, it wasn't a time for amateurs, let's put it that way.
No, it was not, that's for sure.
The Old West was not a place for amateurs.
No, you earned your right to be there. And if you made it past 25 or 30, you earned it. So.
That's exactly right. If you lived past 25, you'd really done something in the Old West.
Yeah. Wow.
But I think it's amazing that somebody this famous was right here in Texas, and I wonder how many people realize that.
Yeah, I know. This is
all brand new. Really studying history, you know?
Yeah. Never even had any idea he made a pass-through like that. That is really cool. That's really cool. This is Your Money with Faye Bagby. Your phone number is?
It's 877-588-3330. That's 877-588-3330. Our website's AmericanFinancialMidland.com.
You know, I'm just saying, I know we romanticize life in the Old West back then, but yeah, that was some rough living, and I don't think we really realize how rough it was until we start hearing the stories.
There's no telling how really bad it was coming around every corner.
Yeah, you got to watch over your shoulder at all times because you never know. People just sneak up on you and whatever, so... That was tough. Okay, so before we wrap, with a life settlement, there's two risks that we talk about, plus an accreditation process. So what is the first thing that people need to know?
Okay, the first thing you need to know is, as we said earlier, you must be accredited. You must make $200,000 a year, or you must be worth $1 million without your house in order to do a life settlement. The other thing is there's two risks involved. The biggest risk is if it goes over, you might have to pay a premium. You need to know how much that premium is. We tell you that in advance. You always know what your risk is. The other thing is it's not until it matures, you do not get your interest. You get principal and interest at maturity.
With an annuity, it's not quite as, yes, they
it's
do
not
still
that
check
hard.
Things.
You still have to have money in the bank when you do an annuity. You still have to have emergency money. You've got to have money for at least a year to pay all your bills before you invest.
All right. All right. So okay. For anybody that either wants more information or has questions or, you know, like you say, a lot of times people have been listening to you for a long time and they're just ready to go. No matter where somebody is in the spectrum, if they want to get started or ask more questions, they do have to call, come in, make an appointment. So one last time, Faye, what is your phone number?
It's 877-588-3330. That's 877-588-3330. 3330. Our website's AmericanFinancialMidland.com.